Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the one and only Murder 123. This is Dr. John. We've got a dynamite show tonight and a dynamite group of co-hosts, I'll tell you that. First of all, in order of calling in, from Emerald Isle, North Carolina, the one and only Papa Stro, the Master of Wrestling. How are you doing tonight, Papa Stro?
Peachy as ever. Out and about doing all I can on my end of the world. Great to be here as always on Murder 123 with you all.
Oh, we're so glad to have you. Absolutely. And Tony Filosi from the murder capital of the world, Harlan, Kentucky. How are you doing?
I'm doing absolutely wonderful. I'm glad to be here tonight, and it looks like it's shaping up to be a good show.
That I believe I agree with you there for sure. And the Queen of Murder 123, Robin McRae, how are you doing tonight?
I am doing great. How's everybody else out there?
Hi, Robin.
Doing good.
Hey, guys.
Good, Robin. How are you doing?
I'm doing real good.
We are ready, and I'll tell you what, we got a dynamite show. Just glad to have everybody here with us. And I guess we'll get right to the point. Murder 123 is going to explore one of the most horrible murders of the last century. And it's one that keeps coming up over and over and over. And it's a shame, but it's good that we do not forget it and that we learn from our lessons. And that's, I guess, the only prelude that I've got for this show. Our show is dedicated tonight to the death of Emmett Till. Somebody said, isn't Emmett Till a sports figure? Somebody got a comment?
I don't know.
I never thought so.
Yeah, there is a sports figure named Emmett Till, and I just heard about that recently. Pop Stro, you got anything on that one?
The name sounds familiar, but I can't really go into detail.
Yeah, me neither, but I just heard that. But anyway, no, this is the young man who, he died in 1955. He was born in 1941. He was from Chicago, Illinois. And I'll just let the story unfold. No previews here. Emmett grew up in a working class neighborhood on the south side of Chicago, and he attended a segregated elementary school, but he really wasn't prepared for the level of segregation that he was going to encounter in Mississippi. His mother sent him told him to take care when he left because it was very racist down there, but he enjoyed pulling pranks and all that, so he was kind of going to be on his own. He was there going to visit his great uncle for the summer. So on August 24th, he was standing with some of his buddies and his cousins outside of a country store in Money, Mississippi. He was bragging that his girlfriend back home was white. His cousins and buddies didn't really believe him, and they just dared him to ask the white woman standing behind the counter at that store for a date. Just all in innocent, but not necessarily such innocent fun in 1955. So Emmett went inside and he bought some candy, and on the way out, they heard him say, "Bye, baby," to the woman behind the counter, and there really weren't any witnesses in the store. But Carolyn Bryant, the woman behind the counter, and her husband actually owned that little store in Money, Mississippi. She claimed that he grabbed her, made some lewd advances, and wolf whistled at her as he walked out. That's what she claimed, with no witnesses or anything. Well, her husband was Roy Bryant, and he was a hothead. And he was her husband, and he came back from a business trip a couple days later, and he heard from his wife how Emmett had been very rude to her and come on to her and everything. So that was exactly not what Roy wanted to hear. So 3 days later, and that was actually it was between 2 and 3 in the morning, Roy and his half-brother J.W. Milam, and another man and a woman got to the house of Mose Wright. That was his great uncle. They knocked on the door, and then they questioned Mr. Wright as to whether or not he had some boys living in the house. Moses took him to see his grandchildren, and they immediately asked Emmett if he was the one who did all the talking to Roy's wife. He said, yes, he did, and they told him to get dressed. He was coming with them. Now, the grandmother or the great aunt offered money to try to keep Emmett there at the house, but they didn't respond to it at all. So they got in the truck, and that was the end of that. The Wrights never saw their grand nephew alive again. So it was just terrible. 3 days later, the body surfaced in the Tallahatchie River. And speaking of the Tallahatchie River, we've got a little surprise that Tony has put together for us. Probably around the bottom of the hour, so no, Tony, we didn't forget that. I just thought it would be a little bit better if we, you know, if we just kind of shared the story. So anyway, what happened that night we'll cover a little bit later, but Emmett was found dead, and he was found in the Tallahatchie River. His body had been weighed down by an old rusty cotton gin, and it was horrible. He had been mutilated. He'd been shot in the head. It was apparent that he had been tortured and everything. After his mother, who lived in Chicago, saw the remains, she decided to have the body brought back up to Chicago and was going to have an open casket funeral. Now, the authorities down there in Mississippi, they wanted to be done with this thing as quickly as possible. But she wanted that body to be brought up there, open casket funeral, just enough to embalm him, and it was horrific. Now, photos of the way he had been treated in his body appeared in Jet Magazine. Does anybody remember Jet Magazine? It's still one of the biggest black entertainment magazines around today. And those pictures did not appear in predominantly white newspapers, white magazines, or white television for several weeks until the story kind of filtered out. I mean, it was just unbelievable. And I can tell you that from the research I've done, which is fairly substantial, the Emmett Till murder turned out to be one of the real linchpins for the beginning of the NAACP's move toward equal rights. And it's very unfortunate that it had to come from an event that staggeringly awful. So they tried the two men, Roy Bryan and J.W. Milam. It was an all-white jury and almost an all-white courtroom. After 30 minutes, the jury came back and said, we find the defendants not guilty because there was no identification of the body being that of Emmett Till. And they never charged them with kidnapping. Pretty bad. So after all was said and done, and I guess we can briefly go over it. They basically hit him and pistol whipped him in the truck that they put him in. They got him to a fella's barn where they whipped him and beat him. And one of the sharecroppers heard all this. And in the courtroom, the sharecropper was asked, well, what did you see these two men or this boy? He said, no, I didn't. They said, well, what did you hear? He said, well, someone was being whipped. And that was all he could say, and that's all he had better say. So they went scot-free. And then what's interesting that happened the next year is because of no double indemnity. In other words, you can't be tried twice for the same crime. The two men, Brian and Milam, both confessed to the murder of Emmett Till. And there was nothing anybody could do. Absolutely unbelievable. So, I mean, you know, what can you say? Now, Mr. Reed, who was the sharecropper, this is a transcript from the trial of what he said. The defense lawyer said, "I believe you stated you heard something that sounded like licks out there in the barn." And Mr. Reed said, "Yes, sir." The defense attorney said, "But you didn't see anybody in the barn, did you?" And he said, "No, sir." "And you don't know whether there was somebody in there, or somebody trying to fix a wagon or a car or something like that, do you?" "Well, it was definitely somebody whipping somebody." He also said that Till, who was just 14, could be heard yelling out for his mother. Now, how horrible and heart-wrenching is that? When the screams stopped, the sharecropper concluded that the boy, Emmett Till, must have been dead. Now, not long after, a truck left, and there was something covered by a tarpaulin that they were taking away, and presumably it was Emmett Till's body. Milam was quoted as saying, after he and his and the others killed Till, they removed his clothing, cleaned the blood up from the shed floor, and spread cottonseed to hide their crime. Now, years later, when the FBI reopened the Till case in 2004, the agents dug up the floor of that shed where Till was killed, searching for blood as well as anything they could find. All they got was fragments of bones and bullets. So whatever evidence that they could have found was destroyed by time and the elements, for sure. Now, here comes, I guess, the most amazing thing that I've ever heard. The woman behind the counter, her name was Carolyn Bryant, and she was the wife of Roy Bryant. In 2017, Tim Tyson, who was writing a book called The Blood of Emmett Till, said that Carolyn Bryant recanted her testimony in court, admitting that Emmett Till had never touched her, threatened her, or harassed her. She said, "Nothing that boy did could ever justify what happened to him." Now, according to this writer, Tim Tyson, Carolyn did not repent for her involvement in the murder. She didn't join in any racial reconciliation groups to make it it appear that she had any that she felt sorry for what she did, and she never went to the Emmett Till Interpretive Center. However, she said she was glad things had changed, and she thought that the old system of white supremacy was wrong, although she had more or less taken it as normal at the time, and she had felt terrible sorry for the suffering of Emmett Till's mother, Mamie Till Mobley. However, she never apologized, and she said, "Well, I'm glad it's better now." It turns out that Roy Bryan, she divorced Roy Bryan, and he got married again and lived a quiet life. Although, after that admission of the two of them killing Emmett Till that night in August of 55, all the black people in the area stopped going to their store, and the store went bankrupt. In terms of J.W. Mobley, he suffered a pretty bad fate. He was put in jail for forging checks, for pickpocketing, for everything. He stayed in jail quite a bit. He was also a welder, and he failed to use protective eye gear, and he lost his sight. And he died, they both died in their early 60s. So they kind of met quite an end for all the deeds that they did. And Carolyn, the wife, she's still alive today. No one knows where. She's at a nursing home. No apology, no nothing. And I can tell you that when J.W. was asked in the interview, did he feel sorry for what he had done killing Emmett Till, he said absolutely not. It's just the way we did things. Now, that is as cold-blooded and cruel as anybody could ever get. And that's our story. Now, I'd love to hear some comments from everybody. And then, by the way, Tony is going to mention, Tony, there was another story that popped up in the newspaper, what, about 2 or 3 days ago? That almost sounds like a takeoff of the Emmett Till murder, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, there's something in Georgia, I believe.
Well, actually, the newspaper I read said it was Wilmington, North Carolina.
North Carolina, I'm sorry. Yeah. Where that these gentlemen, I didn't read the article. I just find this racism so heinous that, you know, I who chases somebody down the street and shoots them because they won't stop and because they think they stole something from their home? Who does that? I mean, there's no legal justification for that. If somebody's leaving your home, you can't shoot people over property. I mean, the only time you in Kentucky, the only time you can shoot folks is if they have a gas, you know, for trying arson. You know, otherwise they have to be in your home or you have to be in fear for your life. So, I mean, that's just another example of senseless stupidity and brutality.
Well, what happened, I read a little bit of the story, and it seems like a deputy sheriff brought two men with him, all three of them had guns, and asked for this lady to send her son out. It was a black family. It was a young girl who had gone missing, and they felt sure that this young man had something to do with it, even though he didn't. They ultimately left, and those three people, the deputy and those other two folks, are going to be sued civilly within an inch of their life. They'll lose everything that they've got, and I believe they probably – I mean, this is a 14-year-old boy. I think they probably – I might say that they deserve what they're going to get. I know that's a terrible thing to say, and please forgive me, but I mean – you know, what do you do?
No matter what they get, it will never justify or be enough for what they did.
No.
I mean, it's not going to matter what punishment, if they lost everything they had, they still have a life. That poor kid had nothing.
Right. Well, no, I'm talking about the one that they went by the other day. Now, they left him alone finally. They had no reason. No, with Emmett Till. Oh, absolutely not. Absolutely not. Just horrid.
But now the there was another one, John. The one I was talking about happened in Georgia. That was a Georgia jogger shot and killed.
Oh, that one. I apologize. Oh yeah. I mean, just what a terrible thing. Yeah. I mean, you know, things like this happen, but many times they do not get as much attention as they should. So, I mean, so what do we think? I mean, any comments? Any other comments?
Oh, yeah.
I just hate to leave without anything else going on.
I agree with Robert. You know, there's nothing that could be done to these people that committed these crimes that it's just it's senseless. It doesn't to any logical thinking person. How can you justify those types of acts? You can't.
Yeah.
I mean,
you can't. There's no justification. Anybody that knows me knows, you know, my stance on the whole racism, because I have no tolerance. I can't tolerate it. The thing is I don't care if you're red, purple, pink, or polka-dotted stripe. If you are a decent human being, I will follow you to hell and back. and I'll be happy to have you with me. I cannot wrap. I've dealt with bigots before and racism. I'm white. That doesn't mean I haven't been around, you know, black people that have had to go through it. I haven't witnessed it. And I am going to be honest and say there are a few things in this world that will upset me and infuriate me to the level that that does. Where I live right now, my next door neighbor is black. And every time I see her, I don't see what color she is. I see what a beautiful human being she is, and that it's a privilege and an honor to live next door to her. There's literally nothing I would not do for that woman. And you get these people that, whether it's you're the wrong nationality or you're black or it's a black person, they don't like a white person, it is just as enrages me. I mean, they lose sight of the fact that these are living, breathing human beings. I don't care if it's the dog. That kind of behavior is inexcusable, even on a primal level. For anybody to feel that they are so empowered that they can do that to another human being is just incomprehensible to me. There is no punishment that will be great enough, and as far as even having them put to death, as far as I'm concerned, they're too good. They shouldn't be allowed that, because then it's over. Their misery is over. They need to have to go through what they have done to these other people. And even then, they deserve worse, as far as I'm concerned. We do this murder one, two, three show, and it's a wonderful show. And I go through all these things, and because I'm an empath, I pick up all the emotions and everything. But when it comes to this particular case, before I even pick up emotions off of him, which I have, all I do is see red. Because there is no way, no plausible way you can find anything to justify that. I don't care if he went over across that counter and fondled her boobs and said all kinds of filth to her. That still is not a justification for what was done to that kid. Nothing. And here again, he didn't do anything. You know, at the end of the day, this Carol, at the end of the day, she made it all up. I think she made it all up because she wanted to get attention from her husband, who wasn't paying attention to her, because I think he was probably fooling around, but that's beside the point. But she wanted the attention. She made it all up. And this is what happened to this kid. Now, let's say it was true. We know it wasn't, but let's say it was true. That still does not justify what was done.
It would justify spanking his grandmother, and that's about it.
Exactly. We are not God. We are not judge and jury. We do not get to punish.
Right.
And whether you believe in God as I do, or whether you're an atheist, you still have no right to ever do what was done to that kid. Just unbelievable to me.
It is. Now, Papa
Strode,
even atheists
got to believe in something. And even atheists know that we're not God.
There's not one
of us. We don't have the right to judge who lives and dies.
Exactly. And who are we to be the punishers?
Right.
I mean, you know, just ridiculous. Now, like I said, I'm in South Carolina, and I have a black person on either side of me. They're lovely people. I'd live by them any day of the week and be proud to do it. And I do. And when I first moved here and I met my neighbors, I didn't look at them and say, oh, you're a black man, you're a black woman. I went, oh, hi, you're a nice person. You live next door to me. I'm glad it'll be nice to be a neighbor with you. I don't see color. I don't see race.
We're all human. We all live on the same planet. We all live
exactly.
on this wonderful
well,
world we call Earth. You know what I mean?
Yep. Well, here's the thing. My husband, my first marriage, he was my age. He came from a family that had decent money. He was white, and on paper, he fit the bill. He also beat the holy hell out of me and my kids. And some of the other things that he did to me made that even look better. Okay? So just because you're the right sex and the right color and the right hair color and everything else on paper is right does not make you a decent human being.
No.
But as bad as he was, Could I have done something back to hurt him? Yeah, I could have had somebody do something to him. I didn't, because it's not what you do. That is not how you deal with things.
No,
Nobody
and no human
has the right to take somebody else's life, let alone
who are we to, like, inflict hurt and pain on anybody? We ain't nobody.
Exactly.
We're not God. We're not any of that at all. We're just human beings living together on this earth. And and when we get to the point where we don't care about life, whether who lives or dies, where babies are being born or unborn being killed, or if someone's a certain race or a creed, and don't even look at the person for who they are and what they've done and the heart they have inside of them. Who are we to judge who they live,
exactly,
who lives and who's died? You know, we are no better than the people we claim are monsters, because we're the monsters,
exactly,
that are killing people, killing lives.
Well, we're not any better if we're doing that than the people that we claim to be against. And this, to have it all about the color of someone's skin. You do not choose what you look like when you're born. You do not choose if you're going to have, you know, tall height and broad shoulders, or short and fat, or brown hair, or red hair, or what color skin you're going to have, or what way your eyes are shaped, or what color they are. We don't have any control over that. And even if we did, it shouldn't matter. All that should matter is the person that you are. Now, like I said before, if he had done these things, which he did not, but let's say he was an awful human being and he did those things, then you go through the courts and you let it deal with it. You don't take that into your hands, and you do not torture someone and kill someone, because now you are worse than the thing that you are so upset about. I mean, that makes you worse than the person that you're going after. I mean, it's just terrible. No,
nothing godly justifies inflicting pain and hurt on others. That's not of God.
And the thing of it is, the only people that know the truth of what happened in any given situation are the people that are there. So when you see these people that go after another person because, like in this case, this Carol woman told her husband that he did something he didn't, you know, and then in my mind, I'd be going, well, what if we're going to kill this guy? What if we're wrong? Like, what if it really didn't happen? You know, because I wasn't there. The husband wasn't there. But he's perfectly happy, you know. She said it happened, I'm going to do it, and then he's done. No, it doesn't work that way.
And sadly, that's happened quite a few times.
It should never work that way.
Innocent people
really
were accused. I mean, look at the witch burnings. Look at the Puritans and the witch burnings.
Well, look at what you did and continue to do the Native Americans.
Right. It all ties in. It all ties in.
Mm-hmm.
Same philosophy.
It seems like we could learn a little bit more from our mistakes in the past, but it seems like we're not always up to that. We're just not up to that. And
Well, it's,
I guess,
like,
that makes me happy.
And
a little bit happy.
A little off topic, but the same principle. Okay, we did all these things to the Native Americans. We killed them just for the sake of the fact that they existed.
Yep.
We took their land. We took their children and tried to make
same
their children
witches.
Believe that they weren't what they are. And we
so-called did all these witches.
Things. Yes.
People again, and look at the Jewish people in Nazi Germany.
Oh, I know. But we did all these things with these Native Americans, okay? And now, now they claim, and even the government, other people, whatever, oh, no, we're not like that now. That was before. We've learned from that. Oh, really? Because when everybody got their stimulus check, who was left out of that? Who never got
it?
It's the Native Americans.
It's a vicious cycle.
Exactly.
And it keeps happening over and over. It's such a vicious cycle.
Yeah, it's terrible, but it's all
the same story all over again.
There is no one on this planet qualified to make that call over whether or not someone, like with Emmett, should be tortured.
No.
That's not a punishment. That's a cat playing with a mouse. That is unacceptable, it is inexcusable, and it is as heinous of a crime as it can get.
And we're still dealing
with
it today. We're still dealing with it today.
Yes, we are. And we see what happens to people in other countries. I mean, you look at some of the greatest miscarriages of justice, Myanmar, North Korea, China. I mean, just in China, you turn your head wrong, they'll pick you up and you're dead. I mean, I've never seen a place like that. We've got so many countries that still have not learned. They're such dictatorships. And now I've heard I heard today that Russia is sending troops into Venezuela to find more people that were against Maduro and try to find them and torture them and kill them. And I'm sure they'll just find some people, anybody, and then it's going to be curtains for those folks.
Yeah, there'll be no proof that they did anything.
No.
It'll be hearsay, word of mouth, but that's good enough for them because they wanted to do it.
They just want somebody. They just want someone to burn in effigy. They don't care. That's the whole deal.
It's like
medieval times and burning the villages.
Yeah.
Yes.
No reason. Husband. It took him 2.2 seconds to decide this is what he was going to do with this guy, which tells me that whether that situation with Carol ever would have happened, he was already in his own head a murderer. It was just finding who's the victim. That's all it was. Because if that is all it took was her to walk in the door and say, hey, honey, get this, and he zeroed in on him and he's going to kill him, that means, in my mind, he is capable of killing anybody, and he was looking for somebody to kill before that happened. That was the excuse he used.
That's quite a wise thing to say. I never thought about it like that. Charles Manson.
Oh, this is like war. You know, we do it for these are the holy wars. We're doing this the cleansing of our country and all this. It's all, you know what it is, and we all know what it is. If it comes on the brass tacks. We know what it is. It's pure evil.
It's evil. That's it, Bob Strode. I mean, you know, it doesn't matter what color they are. You'll have other folks perpetrate just pure evil on others. I mean, you know, the Germans in World War II, when they would execute the Jews, the mothers with the babies, the mothers would, to make sure that the baby died, they would hold, if they had plenty of ammo, they would have the mother hold the baby above their head. They would shoot the baby, then they would shoot the mother. And if they did have plenty of ammo, they would force them to hold the baby down close to her chest where they would kill both of them with one bullet, and then they would just roll them over into a trench. And that was wide on wide, you know. Mm-hmm. So I mean, the only way you can explain this is just, it's just evil. I mean, there's no rhyme or reason to do this. I mean, even if you're ordered, if you're a soldier and you're ordered to do that, I mean, who in their right mind, again, shoots an unarmed civilian with a child and, you know, kills a child?
Exactly.
You know, who does that? I mean, in their right mind.
They can't be human. There's no way. They
can't be human. No.
No. That's something.
Boy, they had a lot of non-humans back there in World War II, didn't they?
Oh yeah.
You know what? I'm sorry. It comes down to some degree, not all of it, but to some degree, to ego, because these people think that they are holier than thou. And it's their way or the highway. And if you tick them off even the least, it's not a matter of a disagreement or walking away. It's, oh, I'm tough enough. I'll just kill you. So it does. An ego plays into it because they have to have this mindset that they are better than anybody else and that they can be the judge and jury over everyone else.
They don't look at their victim as human.
No, they don't. No, all they're worried about is how good they are and how big they are and how tough they are. Oh, just infuriating.
Yes, it really is.
Pure evil, all on in every which sense of the word.
Well, you know, it was really interesting that two men with guns, well, actually there were three men and one woman, could come to that house and just... In plain view of everybody,
and do whatever they want to do.
And that was kind of the way. I read it. There's another story that goes along with the Emmett Till family, is that he had a distant cousin, and her sister sent this cousin who lived down there in Money, Mississippi, a couple railway tickets to get her and her three kids out of there. And she had to put those tickets in someone else's name. And the woman and her three kids had to sneak. Now, this comes from 1955. The woman said, my children and I had to sneak out of the plantation. It's like they were still slaves. I mean, they were treated like slaves because they were sharecroppers. And then again, the family that owned the land had to get money for it. So it's like in many places in the South, the slavery mentality was still there in 1955.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
In the 40s,
really
here,
awful.
In the coal fields. I mean, you had, if a coal miner was killed in the mines and the lady didn't remarry it was a very short time, maybe a month or so, that they threw her and the children out of a coal camp. They would just take in whatever furniture they had. And if they didn't have some place to go, they would just take them and sit them out on the side of the road. So I don't think evil is the most non-racist thing ever, because it kills indiscriminately and it causes suffering indiscriminately. So how do you take a newly widowed person and her children, and you pull them out of their home and you set them on the side of the road.
Yeah.
Or you take them, if they're lucky, you take them and they drop them off at relatives that may take them in. How do you do that? What are you thinking? I mean, what are you worshiping there? The dollar. You're worshiping the dollar. You have no empathy. No empathy whatsoever.
Yeah, I don't know how they can live with themselves.
That's the elite for you.
Yeah, it really is. Well, it's been a very telling story, this one about Emmett Till, and it sparked a lot of good things. It sparked a lot of good work from the NAACP. There's a center down there in Mississippi where they do great work, and what has come out of it, it's terrible that it had to come out of it, but what did come out of it has been very, very good. We would prefer that had not happened, and these other good things would not have, have had to happen. Now, I've got a little bit of a surprise and a treat for you. The story of Emmett Till adapted into a movie called Ode to Billy Joe. Does anybody remember that movie?
Yeah.
Starring Robbie Benson?
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
I'm dating myself, but I just turned 16, and I had the girl next door was 14, and I took her to see the Ode to Billy Joe. We didn't understand it. We were a little young for it. And number two, we really didn't understand the music. There was a girl that we had never heard of named Bobby Gentry. And she sang this song that she had written called Ode to Billy Joe. And it turned out to be one of the biggest hit songs of that year. And it was really the capstone of her career. It was the first thing. She still had, some other hits and everything, but nothing to the extent of Ode to Billy Joe. And I asked Tony, we don't want to be such terrible copyright infringers, but I wanted to play about a minute of this that Tony took the time and care to pull off of the MP4 and make something that we could enjoy. So this is just a little bit of one of the legacies from the Emmett Till murder, and it is Ode to Billy Joe by none other than the great Bobby Gentry. So here she is. And thank you, Tony.
Was it 3rd of June, another sleepy, dusty Delta day? I was out chopping cotton and my brother was baling hay. And at dinner time we stopped and walked back to the house. And Mama hollered at the back door, y'all remember to wipe your feet. And then she said, I got some news this morning from Choctaw Ridge. Today, Billy Joe McAllister jumped off the Tallahatchie Bridge.
And Tony, thanks for helping us with that. And does anybody remember the story about how the Emmett Till murder was adapted to this? Does anyone remember the plot line of this movie?
Vaguely.
Okay, what it was there was this boy named Billy Joe McAllister, and nice kid, and he worked in a sawmill, and he met this girl that he kind of liked, was going back and forth with her. And then at the county fair, I guess it was the state fair, some older men got him drunk, and he was raped. And he actually could not stand it. So instead of being tortured and murdered, he was raped, which left him with, for him, a very, very permanent scar. And he and his girlfriend talked a little bit on the bridge. She left, and he committed suicide. So certainly some parallels there. And it looks like there's another movie. There was a documentary made about the Emmett Till murder and everything that went around it. It's more of a feature film, so we can look forward to that, I think, in about 2 years. Papa Stro, as you'll know, it takes a while to make a movie or anything, doesn't it?
Well, it depends. It varies. Some films take more time than others, so it varies.
Yeah, that post-production can be a killer, can't it?
Yeah, it can.
Yeah. And speaking of that, now, I don't think we've talked to you for a while on this show about the things you are doing, some wonderful things with Dusk and some other things. We've talked with you about these on other shows, but I don't think our crowd here has heard about it. If we can take a little bit of a break from our topic and relax and enjoy some of your success, do you mind sharing with us what's going on with Dusk and the other great things that you're doing?
Well, Dusk, Dusk Series is now on Veil TV, the website availfilms.com, and they're syndicated to Roku, Apple TV, and Amazon Fire TV. And you can check out all 3 seasons so far with Dusk, in which we're preparing for to be on set later this summer for season 4 of the Dusk Series. But you can check it out now, the Dusk Series, the 3 seasons on the Veil TV. Also, I'll be on set soon for The Devil's Daughter, which is the story of Harlequin, origin story, which I'll be portraying Dr. Jeremy Arkham. And anybody knows anything about the Batman story, we'll know who Dr. Arkham is, more or less. But The Devil's Daughter will be on set for that later this year as well. And I've got a new show I do every Friday night on my Facebook called The Stro Zone, where I introduce people to different horror and sci-fi movies from back in the day. It's every Friday night at midnight Eastern Standard Time on my Facebook page, Throw the Maestro on Facebook. So if you're not doing anything Friday nights, come check out the Stro Zone.
Come hang out at the Stro Zone. Sounds like fun.
Yeah. But I'll be in set soon later on this year for the Dust Series season 4 and The Devil's Daughter, and I got another film coming out in the year, possibly begin next year, depending on how the world goes. called The Stench of Iniquity, which is another like horror based film, which I'm betraying an ancient vampire known as Abba in one of the film. So The Stench of Iniquity. They're on Facebook too, facebook.com/stenchofiniquity.
And you're playing Abba.
An ancient vampire, like biblical time, before Dracula and all that, right? So.
Oh, okay. Is there really a before Dracula? Gosh, I didn't know that. I don't think I ever looked past in the past.
In the story.
Dracula.
Yeah.
Pardon?
In the story, in the film.
Oh yeah. But just normally I get to Dracula, maybe Vlad the Impaler, and then we're done. I just you hit my stride there. Well, that sounds great. Now, Tony Filosi, you are working hard on a very important project. Do you mind sharing a little bit of that with us as well?
Yes, we're getting really close to wrapping up the Manzo Shepherd story. In the book will be three or four other stories of murders, local murders that took place. Most of them will be shootouts in downtown Harlem. But the brunt of the book will be about Manzo Shepherd and his murder of Joe Christian, the taxi cab driver on Black Mountain, and his subsequent murder in the Harlan County Courthouse in front of about 300 people. So that will hopefully we'll have that out in the next 45 days or so. We're really close to finishing up, and then shouldn't take us too long to get it published and things like that. And then we're working on several other books. I've teamed up with Ms. Darla Saylor Jackson, who has several very, very talented author, has several books out. She's also helped solve the identity of a young lady that was murdered here locally in 1969. And I forget the name of it. It's actually on Prime, some of it. They discovered her identity with DNA. They actually exhumed the body maybe 3 years ago and solved her identity, but the murder's still unsolved. But she's a very, very talented lady that's has been a godsend to help me with, because I am the world's worst author. I'm good at research, but I am the world's worst author, and she has really, really helped me.
Well, that's great. Well, we're looking forward to that. We'll do a show on your book when you get that out. Just let us know. And Robin McCray, what are you working on? I know you're busy rescuing dogs, and you are a godsend to them.
The numbers are getting bigger all the time. I've been working on that. We've been getting a lot more activity with the Bigfoot, so we've been kind of, you know, keeping an eye on that and dealing with that. And I tell you what, we had all these dog kennels from the shelter that we had brought out here for all these foster dogs. And there was one panel that I put on the ground on the far side of the kennel by the trees because I didn't have any use for it at the time. And I was afraid if the dogs were bebopping around, they'd knock it over and somebody could get hurt. Well, we know the Bigfoots come up through there all the time because they're forever trying to play with the dogs. And we finally have proof that they did because they bent this panel into the shape of a V. They literally bent the poles on the dog kennel panel in like a shape of a V. It was ridiculous. We had to sit there and try to unbend it. That one side looks ridiculous now. But, yeah, so I've been working on the stuff with the Bigfoots like I always am and working with a couple of new people on helping them learn how to mind speak. Just going 90 miles an hour.
That's just great.
Between
I know they
the animals,
they appreciate
the cryptids, and everything else.
Well, that's wonderful. I guess something very interesting happened for me last week. Somebody sent me an email about some additional research articles on the Lizard Man because I've got a brand new book that was supposed to come out this week called Lizard Man Companion. And it turns out that one email and the two articles, thank you, Devin Tate, led me to some amazing things. And one thing that it led me to, and I will go ahead and give a preview for this, there is South Carolina Educational Television actually interviewed the most important people to that Lizard Man case in Bishopville, which is Sheriff Liston Truesdale and of course the one and only Christopher Davis. We actually have interviews with them, and those transcripts will be in the Lizard Man Companion. I'm working on that right now. Plus we've got some additional good fortune is that I found where the actual county that Christopher Davis was murdered, so that we'll actually have the FOIA, the Freedom of Information Act request, and we'll get some information on his demise, which will be extremely authoritative, just kind of like some other things that we've got in the book. So we're looking forward to a great release when we get that thing out here in about probably 2 weeks. It's got to be ready so that people can buy it at, of course, the Lizard Man Festival, which will be online. Go to lizardmanfestival.com. Like it if you haven't liked it, and stay in touch. And it's going to be all day. When I say all day, it's going to be Friday, 11 to 5 p.m. on the internet, and Saturday, 11 to 5 on the internet, and you can enjoy it. And I think we're going to have a great time. So there's my plug for the Lizard Man. And we got Tony working on his book, which is wonderful. We got Papa Stroh working on a bunch of new movies, a bunch of great things happening with him. Looking forward. Papa Stroh, any idea when coronavirus is going to let you be back in the ring so we can come watch you?
Well, it depends on our government and officials, more or less.
Yeah.
So, kind of like a wait
and
see.
Do we think maybe middle of the fall, hopefully?
Well, we'll see. It could be later on this summer. It could be the fall. It could be the winter. Who knows?
Yeah. All right. Well, just let us know, and we'll be there in droves, because it's always fun. It's always fun to watch you do some amazing things in the ring. And Robin, so everything else is well for you?
Yeah. We're doing good over here.
Well, that's good. Well, next week we'll have another exciting Murder 1-2-3. And then the next week we will have the Christopher Davis murder from Sumter County, of all things, about the last place I expected. So we'll have that to talk about. It'll be very interesting weaving that in and out of the Lizard Man story and some recent bad publicity about Lizard Man. And don't know why people would want to give bad publicity about to the Lizard Man. Poor old boy's out there working as hard as he can to scare people. I mean, that's his job, you know. I mean, it's like a dog in an auto graveyard. The dog's there to frighten people away from pulling off parts. So, you know, Lizard Man's out there to scare people. That's his job. So, anyway, we'll see. But anyway, thanks everybody for joining us here on Murder 1-2-3. We'll exit with, again, Tony's clip for Ode to Billy Joe. And we'll have a good one, and we'll see you. Then I will see you, along with Papa Stroh, on his show, WCW Retro. And Papa Stroh, yeah, just tell us what's going on there, because we do have fans that love your show and all that. So remind us who's going to be on Retro.
We have a special interview with a guest from a manager from the Chicago, Illinois area, Chaz Brady. To kickstart the show, and then, of course, we'll be discussing a little bit of news, old school matches, new matches, dream matches, et cetera, and whole points in between. So it should be a good time. And that's 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time this Thursday night on VOCNation.com.
And I will be there at 9:30. Yes, sir, Tony?
I found the documentary of Darla's is on Amazon Prime, and it's called The Dead Unknown. I sent you the link. So if you want to check out the story of Mountain Jane Doe, you can do so on Prime.
All right. Well, that sounds great. We'll get that link up on the Facebook page. So, look, thanks a lot, everybody. We'll see you next week on another edition of Murder 1-2-3. Checking
Take
out.
Take care, everyone.
Yeah, take care, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Was it 3rd of June, another sleepy, dusty Delta day? I was out chopping cotton and my brother was baling hay. And at dinner time we stopped and walked back to the house to eat. Mama hollered at the back door, y'all remember to wipe your feet. And then she said, Ridge. Today, Billy Joe McAllister jumped off the Tallahatchie Bridge.